Chapter 4. The landlady was employed in cooking their supper in the kitchen. This young person had been educated in the village poorhouse, and having been pronounced by Dr. Dobbs and the schoolmaster the idlest, dirtiest, and most passionate little minx with whom either had ever had to do, she was, after receiving a very small portion of literary instruction, indeed it must be stated, that the young lady did not know her letters, bound apprentice at the age of 9 years to Mrs. Score, her relative, and landlady of the Oogle Inn. If Miss Cat, or Catherine Hall, was a slattern and a minx, Mrs. Score was a far superior shrew, and for the 7 years of her apprenticeship the girl was completely at her mistress's mercy. Yet though wondrously stingy, jealous, and violent, while her maid was idle and extravagant, and her husband seemed to abet the girl, Mrs. Score put up with the wench's airs, idleness, and caprices, without ever wishing to dismiss her from the Oogle. The fact is, that Miss Catherine was a great beauty, and for about 2 years, since her fame had begun to spread, the custom of the inn had also increased vastly. When there was a debate whether the farmers, on their way from market, would take t'other pot, Catherine, by appearing with it, would straightway cause the liquor to be swallowed and paid for. And when the traveller who proposed riding that night and sleeping at Coventry or Birmingham was asked by Miss Catherine whether he would like a fire in his bedroom, he generally was induced to occupy it, although he might before have vowed to Mrs. Score that he would not for 1,000 guineas be absent from home that night. The girl had 6 lovers in the village, and these were bound in honor to spend their pence at the alehouse she inhabited. O woman, lovely woman, what strong resolves canst thou twist round thy little finger? What gunpowder passions canst thou kindle with a single sparkle of thine eye? What lies and fribble nonsense canst thou make us listen to, as they were gospel truth or splendid wit? Above all, what bad liquor canst thou make us swallow, when thou puttest a kiss within the cup, and we are content to call the poison wine? The mountain wine at the Oogle was, in fact, execrable, but Mrs. Cat, who served it to the 2 soldiers, made it so agreeable to them, that they found it a passable, even a pleasant task, to swallow the contents of a 2nd bottle. The miracle had been wrought instantaneously on her appearance. For whereas at that very moment the Count was employed in cursing the wine, the landlady, the wine grower, and the English nation generally, when the young woman entered and, choosing so, to interpret the oaths, said, "Coming, Your Honor, I think Your Honor," called Gustavus Adolphus whistled, stared at her very hard, and seeming quite dumb-stricken by her appearance, contented himself by swallowing a whole glass of mountain by way of reply. Mr. Brock was, however, by no means so confounded as his captain. He was 30 years older than the latter, and in the course of 50 years of military life had learned to look on the most dangerous enemy, or the most beautiful woman, with the like daring, devil-may-care determination to conquer. "My dear Mary," then said that gentleman, "His Honor is a lord, as good as a lord, that is, for all he allows such humble fellows as I am to drink with him." Catherine dropped a low curtsy, and said, "Well, I don't know, if you are joking a poor country girl, as all you soldier gentlemen do, but His Honor looks like a lord, though I never see one, to be sure." "Then," said the captain, gathering courage, "how do you know I look like one, pretty Mary?" "Pretty Catherine. I mean Catherine, if you please, sir." Here Mr. Brock burst into a roar of laughter, and shouting with many oaths that she was right at first, invited her to give him what he called a buss. Pretty Catherine turned away from him at this request, and muttered something about "heap your distance, low fellow. Buss indeed, poor country girl, etc., etc.," placing herself, as if for protection, on the side of the captain. That gentleman looked also very angry, but whether at the sight of innocence so outraged, or the insolence of the corporal for daring to help himself first, we cannot say. Arky, Mr. Brock, he cried very fiercely, I will suffer no such liberties in my presence. Remember, it is only my condescension which permits you to share my bottle in this way. Take care I don't give you instead a taste of my cane. So saying, he, in a protecting manner, placed one hand round Mrs. Catherine's waist, holding the other clenched very near to the corporal's nose. Mrs. Catherine, for her share of this action of the Count's, dropped another curtsy and said, Thank you, my lord. But Galgenstein's threat did not appear to make any impression on Mr. Brock, as indeed there was no reason that it should. For the corporal, at a combat of fisticuffs, could have pounded his commander into a jelly in 10 minutes. So he contented himself by saying, Well, noble captain, there's no harm done. It is an honor for poor old Peter Brock to be at table with you, and I am sorry, sure enough. In truth, Peter, I believe thou art. Thou hast good reason, eh, Peter? But never fear, man. Had I struck thee, I never would have hurt thee. I know you would not, replied Brock, laying his hand on his heart with much gravity, and so peace was made, and healths were drunk. Miss Catherine condescended to put her lips to the captain's glass, who swore that the wine was thus converted into nectar, and although the girl had not previously heard of that liquor, she received the compliment as a compliment, and smiled and simpered in return. The poor thing had never before seen anybody so handsome, or so finely dressed as the Count, and, in the simplicity of her coquetry, allowed her satisfaction to be quite visible. Nothing could be more clumsy than the gentleman's mode of complimenting her. But for this, perhaps, his speeches were more effective than others more delicate would have been. And though she said to each, Oh, now, my lord, and, hey, captain, how can you flatter one so? And our honor's laughing at me, and made such polite speeches as are used on these occasions, it was manifest from the flutter and blush, and the grin of satisfaction which lighted up the buxom features of the little country beauty, that the Count's first operations had been highly successful. When following up his attack, he produced from his neck a small locket which had been given him by a Dutch lady at the Brill, and begged Miss Catherine to wear it for his sake, and chucked her under the chin, and called her his little rosebud. It was pretty clear how things would go. Anybody who could see the expression of Mr. Brock's countenance at this event might judge of the progress of the irresistible High Dutch conqueror. Being of a very vain communicative turn, our fair barmaid gave her two companions not only a pretty long account of herself, but of many other persons in the village, whom she could perceive from the window opposite to which she stood. S, your honor, said she, my lord, I mean, 16 last March, though there's a many girl in the village, that at my age is quite chits. There's Polly Randall now, that red-haired girl along with Thomas Curtis. She's 17 if she's a day, though he is the very first sweetheartess he has had. Well, as I am saying, I was bred up here in the village. Father and mother died very young, and I was left a poor orphan. Well, bless us, if Thomas haven't kissed her. To the care of Mrs. Score, my aunt, who has been a mother to me, a stepmother, you know, and I've been to Stratford Fair, and to Warwick many a time, and there's two people who have offered to marry me, and ever so many who want to, and I won't have none, only a gentleman, as I've always said. Not a poor clodpole, like Tom there with the red waistcoat, he was one that asked me, nor a drunken fellow like Sam Blacksmith yonder, him whose wife has got the black eye, but a real gentleman, like whom, my dear? Said the captain, encouraged. La, sir, how can you? Why, like our squire, Sir John, who rides in such a mortal fine gold coach, or, at least, like the parson, Dr. Dobbs, that's he, in the black gown, walking with Madam Dobbs in red. And are those his children? Yes. Two girls and two boys, and only think, he calls one William Nassau, and one George Denmark, isn't it odd? And from the parson, Mrs. Catherine went on to speak of several humble personages of the village community, who, as they are not necessary to our story, need not be described at full length. It was when, from the window, Corporal Brock saw the altercation between the worthy divine and his son, respecting the latter's ride, that he judged it a fitting time to step out on the green, and to bestow on the two horses those famous historical names which we have just heard applied to them. Mr. Brock's diplomacy was, as we have stated, quite successful, for, when the Parsons boys had ridden and retired along with their mama and papa, other young gentlemen of humbler rank in the village were placed upon Erik of Denmark and William of Nassau, the corporal joking and laughing with all the grown-up people. The women, in spite of Mr. Brock's age, his red nose, and a certain squint of his eye, vowed the corporal was a jewel of a man, and among the men his popularity was equally great. How much dost thee get, Thomas Clodpole? Said Mr. Brock to a countryman. He was the man whom Mrs. Catherine had described as her suitor, who had laughed loudest at some of his jokes. How much dost thee get for a week's work now? Mr. Clodpole, whose name was really Bullock, stated that his wages amounted to 3 shillings and a pun. 3 shillings and a pun, monstrous. And for this, you toil like a galley slave, as I have seen them in Turkey and America, eh, gentlemen, and in the country of Prester John. You shiver out of bed on icy winter mornings, to break the ice for ball and apple to drink. Yes, indeed, said the person addressed, who seemed astounded at the extent of the corporal's information. Or you clean pixie, and take dung down to meadow, or you act watchdog and tend sheep, or you sweep a scythe over a great field of grass, and when the sun has scorched the eyes out of your head, and sweated the flesh off your bones, and well nigh fried the soul out of your body, you go home, to what? 3 shillings a week and a pun. Do you get pudding every day? No, only Sundays. Do you get money enough? No, sure. Do you get beer enough? Oh no, never, said Mr. Bullock quite resolutely. Worthy Clodpole, give us thy hand. It shall have beer enough this day, or my name's not Corporal Brock. Here's the money, boy. There are 20 pieces in this purse. And how do you think I got 'em, and how do you think I shall get others when these are gone? By serving her sacred majesty, to be sure. Long life to her, and down with the French king. Bullock, a few of the men, and 2 or 3 of the boys, piped out an hurrah, in compliment to this speech of the corporal's. But it was remarked that the greater part of the crowd drew back, the women whispering ominously to them, and looking at the corporal. I see, ladies, what it is, said he. Who are frightened, and think I am a crimp come to steal your sweethearts away. What? Call Peter Brock a double dealer? I tell you what, boys, Jack Churchill himself has shaken his hand, and drunk a pot with me. Do you think he'd shake hands with a rogue? Here's Thomas Clodpole has never had beer enough, and here am I will stand treat to him, and any other gentleman. Am I good enough company for him? I have money, look you, and like to spend it. What should I be doing dirty actions for, hey, Thomas? A satisfactory reply to this query was not, of course, expected by the corporal nor uttered by Mr. Bullock, and the end of the dispute was that he and 3 or 4 of the rustic bystanders were quite convinced of the good intentions of their new friend, and accompanied him back to the Oogle to regale upon the promised beer. Among the corporal's guests was one young fellow whose dress would show that he was somewhat better to do in the world than Clodpole and the rest of the sunburned ragged troop who were marching towards the alehouse. This man was the only one of his hearers who, perhaps, was skeptical as to the truth of his stories. But as soon as Bullock accepted the invitation to drink, John Hayes, the carpenter, for such was his name and profession, said, Well, Thomas, if thou goest, I will go too. I know thee wilt, said Thomas. I'll go anywhere Caddy Hall is, provided thou canst go for nothing. Nay, I have a penny to spend as good as the corporal here. A penny to keep, you mean. For all your love for the lass at the Bugle, apostrophe, did he ever spend a shilling in the house? He wouldn't go now, but that I am going to, and the captain here stands treat. Come, come, gentlemen, no quarreling, said Mr. Brock. If this pretty fellow will join us, amen say I. There's lots of liquor, and plenty of money to pay the score. Comrade Thomas, give us thy arm. Mr. Hayes, you're a hearty cock, I make no doubt, and all such are welcome. Come along, my gentlemen farmers, Mr. Brock shall have the honor to pay for you all. And with this, Corporal Brock, accompanied by Messrs. Hayes, Bullock, Blacksmith, Baker's Boy, Butcher, and one or two others, adjourned to the inn, the horses being, at the same time, conducted to the stable. Although we have, in this quiet way, and without any flourishing of trumpets, or beginning of chapters, introduced Mr. Hayes to the public, and although, at first sight, a sneaking carpenter's boy may seem hardly worthy of the notice of an intelligent reader, who looks for a good cutthroat or highwayman for a hero, or a pickpocket at the very least, this gentleman's words and actions should be carefully studied by the public, as he is destined to appear before them under very polite and curious circumstances during the course of this history. The speech of the rustic juvenile, Mr. Claude Pole, had seemed to infer that Hayes was at once careful of his money and a warm admirer of Mrs. Catherine of the Eagle, and both the charges were perfectly true. Hayes's father was reported to be a man of some substance, and young John, who was performing his apprenticeship in the village, did not fail to talk very big of his pretensions to fortune of his entering, at the close of his indentures, into partnership with his father, and of the comfortable farm and house over which Mrs. John Hayes, whoever she might be, would one day preside. Thus, next to the barber and butcher, and above even his own master, Mr. Hayes took rank in the village. And it must not be concealed that his representation of wealth had made some impression upon Mrs. Hall, toward whom the young gentleman had cast the eyes of affection. If he had been tolerably well-looking, and not pale, rickety, and feeble as he was, if even he had been ugly, but withal a man of spirit, it is probable the girl's kindness for him would have been much more decided. But he was a poor weak creature, not to compare with honest Thomas Bullock, by at least 9 inches, and so notoriously timid, selfish, and stingy, that there was a kind of shame in receiving his addresses openly, and what encouragement Mrs. Catherine gave him could only be in secret. But no mortal is wise at all times. And the fact was, that Hayes, who cared for himself intensely, had set his heart upon winning Catherine, and loved her with a desperate, greedy eagerness and desire of possession, which makes passions for women often so fierce and unreasonable among very cold and selfish men. His parents, whose frugality he had inherited, had tried in vain to wean him from this passion, and had made many fruitless attempts to engage him with women who possessed money and desired husbands. But Hayes was, for a wonder, quite proof against their attractions, and Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.